Fifth principle. All things were created by God. Therefore, upon him all mankind are equally dependent, and to him they are equally responsible. The reality of a divine creator. The founders vigorously affirm throughout their writings that the foundation of all reality is the existence of the creator, who is the designer of all things in nature and the promulgator of all the laws which govern nature. The founders were in harmony with the thinking of John Locke as expressed in his famous essay concerning human understanding. In it, Locke pointed out that it defies the most elementary aspects of reason and experience to presuppose that everything in existence developed as a result of fortuitous circumstance. The mind, for example, will not accept the proposition that the forces of nature churning about among themselves would ever produce a watch or even a lead pencil, let alone the marvelous intricacies of the human eye, the ear, or even the simplest of the organisms found in nature. All these are the product of intelligent design and high precision engineering. Locke felt that a person who calls himself an atheist is merely confessing that he has never dealt with the issue of the Creator's existence. Therefore, to Locke, an atheist would be, to that extent, irrational and out of touch with reality. In fact, out of touch with the most important and fundamental reality. How can one know there is a God? In his essay concerning human understanding, John Locke insisted that everyone can know there is a divine creator. It is simply a case of thinking about it. To begin with, each person knows that he exists. With Descartes, each person can say, cogito ergo sum. With God, each person can say, I am. Furthermore, each person knows that he is something. He also knows that a something could not be produced by a nothing. Therefore, whatever brought man and everything else into existence also had to be something. It follows that this something, which did all of this organizing and arranging, would have to be all-knowing to the full extent required for such an organization and arrangement. This something would therefore have to be superior to everything which had resulted from this effort. This element of superiority makes this something the ultimate good for all that has been organized and arranged. In the Anglo-Saxon language, the word for supreme or ultimate good is God. Getting to know God. Man is capable of knowing many things about God, Locke said. The Creator must of necessity be a cogitative being, for man is a cogitative being. Certainly, a non-cogitative being, like a rock, could never have produced a cogitative being like a man. We may also know that the divine Creator has a sense of compassion and love, for he gave mankind these sublime qualities. The Creator would also reflect a fine sense of right and wrong, and also a sense of indignation or even anger with those who violate the laws of right action. In other words, God has a strong sense of justice. Remorse for wrong also arouses a sense of compassion in the Creator, just as it does in human beings whom he designed. There are other attributes of man which human beings must necessarily share with their Creator if man is made in the image of God. One would be a sense of humor. The Creator must also be a great artist on the visual plane. Everything the Creator organizes is in terms of beauty through color, form, and contrasts. Obviously, man can enjoy only to a finite degree the capacity of his Creator to appreciate the vast panorama of sensory satisfaction which we call beauty. So, as John Locke says, there are many things man can know about God, and because any thoughtful person can gain an appreciation and conviction of these many attributes of the Creator, Locke felt that an atheist has failed to apply his divine capacity for reason and observation. The American Founding Fathers agreed with Locke. They considered the existence of the Creator as the most fundamental premise underlying all self-evident truth. It will be noted as we proceed through this study that every single self-evident truth enunciated by the Founders is rooted in the presupposition of a divine Creator. Concerning God's revealed law distinguishing right from wrong. The Founders considered the whole foundation of a just society to be structured on the basis of God's revealed law. These laws constituted a moral code clearly distinguishing right from wrong. This concept was not new with the Founders. This was the entire foundation of all religious cultures worldwide. It was particularly emphasized in the Judeo-Christian structure of the English law. No authority on the subject was more widely read than William Blackstone. He established the classes for the first law school at Oxford in 1753. His lectures on the English law were published in 1765 and were as widely read in America as they were in England. In his commentaries on the laws of England, Blackstone propounded the generally accepted idea that when the Creator formed the universe, he organized it and then impressed certain principles upon that matter from which it can never depart and without which it would cease to be. He then went on to say that the will of God, which is expressed in the orderly arrangement of the universe, is called the law of nature, and that there are laws for human nature just as surely as they exist for the rest of the universe. He said the laws for human nature had been revealed by God, whereas the laws of the universe must be learned through scientific investigation. Blackstone stated that upon these two foundations, the law of nature and the law of revelation, depend all human laws. As we shall see later, the attitude of the Founders towards God's law, both natural and revealed, gave early Americans a very high regard for the law as a social institution. They respected the sanctity of the law in the same way that it was honored among the Anglo-Saxons and by ancient Israel. The nearness of God. It is also important to note that the Founders did not look upon God as some mysterious teleological force operating automatically and indifferently in nature, as modern deists claim, but they believed in a Creator who is both intelligent and benevolent, and therefore anxious and able to respond to people's petitions when they are deserving of needed blessings and engaged in a good cause. Days of fasting and prayer were commonplace in America. Most of the Founders continually petitioned God in fervent prayers, both public and private, and looked upon His divine intervention in their daily lives as a singular blessing. They were continually expressing gratitude to God as the nation survived one major crisis after another. George Washington. George Washington was typical of the Founders in this respect. Charles Braceland Flood discovered in his research that during the Revolutionary War, there were at least 67 desperate moments when Washington acknowledged that he would have suffered disaster had not the hand of God intervened in behalf of the struggle for independence. After being elected president, Washington stressed these sentiments in his first inaugural address when he said, quote, No people can be bound to acknowledge and adore the invisible hand which conducts the affairs of men more than the people of the United States. Every step by which they have advanced to the character of an independent nation seems to have been distinguished by some token of providential agency. End of quote. James Madison. Madison was equally emphatic on this point when he contemplated the work of the Constitutional Convention and saw the guiding influence of God just as Washington had seen it on the battlefield. Said he, quote, "The real wonder is that so many difficulties should have been surmounted with a unanimity almost as unprecedented as it must have been unexpected. It is impossible for any man of candor to reflect on this circumstance without partaking of the astonishment. It is impossible for the man of pious reflection not to perceive in it a finger of that almighty hand which has been so frequently and signally extended to our relief in the critical stages of the revolution." End of quote. In God we trust. From all of this, it would seem that the founders were not indulging in any idle gesture when they adopted the motto, "In God we trust." Neither was it a matter of superfluous formality when they required that all witnesses who testify in the courts or before congressional hearings must take an oath and swear or affirm before God that they will tell the truth. As Washington pointed out in his farewell address, "Where is the security for property, for reputation, for life, if the sense of religious obligation desert the oaths which are the instruments of investigation in the courts of justice?" In fact, it was not at all uncommon, as Alexis de Tocqueville discovered, to look with the greatest precaution upon an individual who had no religious convictions. He wrote, quote, "While I was in America, a witness who happened to be called to the sessions of the county of Chester, state of New York, declared that he did not believe in the existence of God or in the immortality of the soul. The judge refused to admit the evidence on the ground that the witness had destroyed beforehand all the confidence of the court in what he was about to say." End of quote. In a note, de Tocqueville added, quote, "The New York Spectator of August 23, 1831, related the fact in the following terms. The presiding judge remarked that he had not before been aware that there was a man living who did not believe in the existence of God, that this belief constituted the sanction in law, that which gives binding force, of all testimony in a court of justice, and that he knew of no case in a Christian country where a witness had been permitted to testify without such belief." End of quote. This now brings us to the next important principle enunciated by the founders.